Ventures Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, I'm going to take the blame for this one.
Wah, wah, wah.
I'm gonna go ahead and I was way too confident heading into this thing. I thought that AD and LeBron were capable of scoring more than 2 points more than I would in the fourth quarter in that game. The Clippers wind up winning 112 to 102. That was about the final score I thought that we were going to have tonight, but in the opposite direction.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, we were feeling pretty good about that. It was interesting to see it in action for the first time, right? Like,
yeah.
Even preseason two, it's all projections and just kind of this is what that looks like. There were some things the Lakers need to clean up just from an X's and O's and rotation standpoint. I don't think Vogel had a particularly good game, and we'll get into some of the specifics about that.
Shouts to fucking KCP guarding Kawhi Leonard. What the hell?
You know, KCP scored 0 points in 27 minutes, but he made up for it by not being able to defend anyone either.
It's like Rich Paul designed the game plan for this thing.
The problem, bro, is like, who should play?
Well, that was the thing.
That's kind of an issue, and that goes back to just a general issue with the roster, right?
Yeah.
Is in this, like, so look, first and foremost, this was a high-level game.
It was incredible.
It was a really, really good season opener. The Lakers are not that far away. Obviously, they're without Paul George. We're without Kyle Kuzma.
Tomato, tomato.
But that was a really high level game in which you'll see that sometimes in the first like couple weeks of the season, and then it becomes this kind of grind, right? It becomes this marathon. I thought this is kind of like a playoff preview in some way, in that like both teams were really trying and going hard, and it was just that first salvo of this is what this could look like.
Yeah.
The part that rubs me the wrong way the most is just the difference in the Clippers' level of want it versus what the Lakers have. Mm-hmm. They give up so, like, look, how much bigger are the Lakers than the Clippers? And how many 50-50 balls did the Lakers lose to the Clippers?
Yeah.
Right? That just like Patrick Beverley coming in and getting 10 rebounds and getting an offensive rebound off of a free throw because you don't box out. Like, that's just stuff like that's not acceptable. Right? So that is the one thing. And that's what the Clippers have built their team around. And now they've got guys who can hoop too, right?
Yeah.
You know, the Lakers aren't talented enough to be able to just be better than them. Like those early 2000s Lakers teams, Lakers would still win some games against teams that were trying way harder than they would. This Lakers team doesn't have enough talent for that. And so that was probably the thing that rubbed me the wrong way the most.
Patrick Beverley, like you said, 10 rebounds. JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard combined for 8.
And Dwight had 6 of them.
Woof. Like you guys can already tell, we're basically going to go through this game, you know, kind of subject by subject, and we're just kind of wander around this game. And look, it's one game out of 81 or out of 82. Mm-hmm. It felt like more than one game, right? It felt like you said, like a playoff game.
It was a big game. There's no way around that.
Can I? Because I don't want to spend this whole time just shitting on what we saw from the Lakers. And there's plenty to shit on. You know, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope continues to exist. But I do want to say, like, in terms of vibes at the game, this was exactly what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
This was exactly it. This was, especially it being technically a Clippers home game, air quotes, you know, heavy air quotes there. But what that led to was like a 50-50 crowd. And it sounded like a high school game where there's just a constant rumble behind it, and every single play there's a big reaction, and the crowd is kind of like a part of the game. It's a part of the competition, which side of the crowd, which half of the crowd is going to be louder. I really, really enjoyed this game. And come playoff time, like if this becomes a playoff series, oh, give me that.
Sure.
Give me that. That was incredible. So other than that, though, I want to start here. Doc Rivers starts the game by having Patrick Beverley guard LeBron James. Mm-hmm. And the Lakers basically countered to that by putting mouse in the house, and LeBron James started posting up a bunch, right? And then everybody started posting up a bunch.
Kevin O'Connor tweeted out that the Lakers posted up more in the first quarter than any team in the entire NBA did all of last season.
Right. And what I thought was, and now I'm not, you know, maybe this was something that Doc kind of hoped for going in, that he would kind of lull the Lakers into poor offensive strategy. But what that does, with how much posting up the Lakers did, that takes them away from the high pick and roll that they were running with AD and LeBron. And what that does is it really limits what JaVale McGee can do in that game.
Right.
Because what you're doing now is you're just having him stand there with the main subject of the play being like 20 feet away from him.
Right. You've got all these high post touches, and then the other four guys are not all spaced beyond the 3-point line. That's mm-hmm. something that if you are going to post up, you need that quality spacing around you. And the Lakers posted up some, which wasn't always bad. When you've got those size mismatches, the Lakers didn't go to that Anthony Davis, LeBron James pick and roll enough in this game. Now, the Clippers were switching that.
Yeah.
But that is still, we've talked about all the, okay, how do you defend this? And one of the ways that we talked about is switching that. Well, if they're going to do that, then matchup hunt, right? You get that LeBron on Patrick Beverley. They did that intentionally at the beginning, right? But you get those plays where it's AD instead matched up with whoever's guarding LeBron, right? Mm-hmm. And AD can really take advantage of that. And I just thought the spacing around that, and then just like the decision making, LeBron.
Yes,
you know,
I was going to say this. Yeah,
he had 5 turnovers, several other passes deflected. Just like it was really careless, and they were going under screens a lot on LeBron, and he just did not seem to trust his 3 ball. Mm-hmm. Right, he was 1-for-5 from 3, and he probably should have taken 8 or 9 threes based on the coverage that they had on him, and he was just trying to force something that wasn't there. And he's always been the type of player that can do that, but he was not that type in this game, and that compounded with, you know, we saw that in the turnovers that they had, and then just their general inability to score in the fourth.
Well, and with that strategy that the Lakers were using, where it was so much posting up with JaVale or with Dwight out there, that meant there was one extra body in the key. And I thought, like, you know, I think Davis deserves some, well, he's going to get a bunch of criticism from this because I didn't really like the offensive game he played too much. But it's hard to knock a guy for not rolling hard to the basket or when one, he's not getting the opportunities because of the sets they're running. And also, two, because, like, there was literally nowhere here for him to go in there. Like, if the Lakers were trying to, you know, they would start out with basically LeBron or AD kind of posting up and asking for a double. And then if they got that double, they would make one pass and then try to rotate it out of there. But if your one pass is only going about 7 to 10 feet, then you're not really getting anything from you're not gaining anything from the other team trying to double there. And and I thought, you know, for Davis, like, the Clippers basically said, okay, we aren't obviously as tall, but we are laterally long enough to basically wall you off from the basket. And he didn't spend very much time in front of the rim at all this game.
No, and the Lakers didn't have good off-ball movement. They'd been split cutting and back screening and the different actions that you can run off of those post touches to, like, ideally what you want your big to do on those catches, especially if they're not a deep post catch, and most of AD's post catches are in that mid-post area about 15 feet away, is you want to run some action off of that, and then if that's not open, that's okay. It occupies defenders and gets bodies on the move, so that's a cleaner one-on-one type of situation rather than the we're just going to stand here and spot up, because then guys are kind of halfway in between that double team and still able to, you know, on those soft doubles and still able to close out to the 3-point line. There were a lot of things. And just let's talk more about Vogel. I know we got to kick it to a break in a moment, but let's talk more about Vogel when we get back from that.
Amen. So are we on Jason Kidd countdown watch or?
Not yet. And luckily we've got like an 18 game stretch coming out. Utah is going to be tough at home. They're a good team, but the Lakers should, like, they should be the favorite in that game. That's a game they should win. And over the next 18, we've got plenty of opportunities to feel good about ourselves after this initial loss. But Vogel got out coached by Doc Rivers in a couple of specifics. We touched on the spacing on offense, the lack of split cuts, simply from a rotation standpoint.
Yeah, it felt like a Luke game.
It did, bro.
It felt like those games that Luke would just throw shit at the wall and hope that something sticks.
I thought Doc Rivers did something really clever in that in both the first and third quarters, he took Kawhi Leonard out fairly early for a superstar, right? With 4.5 minutes left or something like that in the first quarter and the third quarter. And what he did was he would put Kawhi back in as soon as Danny Green came out of the game. And that's good scouting. It's knowledge that the Lakers don't have a lot of size on the perimeter. Kawhi just chews up those size advantages. Like we were, and KCP is rightfully criticized for this game. He's also just not capable of guarding Kawhi Leonard, no matter how
hard. Like asking me to guard Kawhi Leonard,
right? It's not KCP's fault there, right? And and so the quality of looks that Kawhi got with KCP on him were significantly better than they did with Danny Green, and Doc maximized the amount of minutes that Kawhi had with Danny Green off of the floor. With Danny Green off of the floor, I'd marked it down. It was 10 minutes and 48 seconds, I believe. I'm sorry, 10 minutes and 14 seconds. Lakers were minus 11 in a game that they lost by 10. That's, you know, and there are so many different ways you can slice up plus minus that I don't want to sound disingenuous, but it was so obvious in that 40-point second quarter that the Clippers had that they hit 12 shots in a row, bro. We've talked a lot about the offense, but the defense was the big problem for most of this game. And a big part of that is that they did not have the personnel out there to match. Part of that's a roster issue, but in a game like this, you want to mirror Danny Green's minutes to Kawhi's. And let's pray we get Iggy somewhere down the line.
They desperately need another wing. Desperately. Yeah. I know AD is you know, and LeBron are close with Boogie, but at some point, like given what we saw tonight, by the playoffs, if the Lakers don't add like another wing or two, maybe even, like I'm really nervous about, and here's the thing about wings in the NBA. Is that this is not a new development, that you need guys at the wing to combat elite wing play. And let's say the Lakers play the Clippers again in the playoffs. This isn't the team that they're going to face. Like, you can't mirror Danny Green minutes with both Kawhi and Paul George, especially if LeBron doesn't want to guard either of those guys. So what did you think about that? That was one of the things I really wanted to ask you about is, like, do you think that's the kind of game that LeBron should have taken up the challenge a little bit and guarded Kawhi a little bit more often than he did?
Yeah, part of it is it's one game of 82, and it's easy to get caught up in this is the season opener against the Battle of LA and all of that. If you want to make the argument that it is just one game out of 82, and there is really no practical need to put extra wear and tear on a LeBron James who's going to have an inordinate shot creation responsibility on the offensive end, you wouldn't have to twist my arm too hard to agree with that.
Yeah.
But this was a preview of exactly why we do need LeBron James to defend Kawhi Leonard if we see this team in a series that matters. Because Paul George was out, and not just from a talent standpoint, Paul George is like 6'7", 6'8".
Yeah.
And he's a big wing too. We only really got one of those guys. If LeBron's not doing that, yeah, Kuzma will be back. But I mean, how much do we want Kuzma defending Kawhi or Paul George?
Paul George.
Right? Like, it's good to have size on the wing, but depending on Kuz to be a lockdown guy seems like a bit of a stretch, right? And so Danny Green can't guard both of those dudes. And I understand not giving that responsibility to LeBron now, but that is exactly the reason why you have to have LeBron doing that, especially if we don't get Iggy at some point.
Yeah, and again, this is only one game, like you're saying. It is only one game, and you don't want to overreact to a single game. And it doesn't make much sense, given how long a season this is going to be and the kind of expectations the Lakers have after this regular season. Like, you have to get through 82 games and then have legs left over to have LeBron be able to guard Kawhi in a postseason setting. I would frankly be shocked if LeBron wasn't up to that challenge come postseason time. So, yeah, I mostly wanted to see it as just a basketball fan, though. Like, I wanted to see LeBron go up against Kawhi. And this was kind of the thing that we talked about heading into this game was, all right, this feels like the kind of game that LeBron would come out and make a statement in. This feels like the kind of game that, okay, let's say LeBron doesn't make a statement but plays Kawhi relatively even or outright even. Well, AD has to dominate, and neither of those things happened.
Right. And yeah, that's the other element of this is that, like, the Clippers did what they had to do, credit to them, but that was not either LeBron or AD's best.
No.
And even if we get one of those guys at their best, maybe the story of this game is a little different. It's at least close down the stretch, right? So, yeah, no, that's a fair point.
Did you notice the same thing I was noticing, that I felt like AD was bailing out guys with his shot selection? Like, maybe he was looking at too many guys in the key or whatever, yeah. but I thought he took way too many fall away mid-range jumpers.
This is something that I haven't, you know, talked about a ton, but AD doesn't have great shot selection. He takes hard shots. Mm-hmm. Now, he is freaking unstoppable on good shots. Like, if you get AD a good shot, he is going to make it more than most guys in the NBA. But he takes a lot of really difficult shots. And the type of offense that we're running is really conducive to those types of looks, right?
Yeah.
Where he's taking those contested fadeaway kind of falling type of shots. So it will be nice. You know, we miss Kuz. We miss Rondo in this game. I know, I know that's not
exactly. He's vomited a little bit.
I know, but just there's so little in the way of shot creation. Everybody else.
And handling pressure.
Right. Yeah.
Like none of the guards could handle any pressure.
They jammed up our guards so hard, man. Like, yeah. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Caruso's game. I thought he would have really helped on the defensive end tonight. But, you know, the ball handling and shot creation, like, this was a game where having another guy who can create a shot, even if it's not for himself, like Rondo, he would have been helpful, ironically, with as much as we kill him. But again, this was a high level game. This is a game that was good to expose Lakers' weaknesses in ways that lesser teams will not.
Last point on the guard play, and then we'll move on to some other stuff. I want to talk about a couple positives. It's weird. Jared Dudley was a minus 20 in the game, but I thought he helped in some ways that were interesting. But before we get to all that, though, I want to talk about the guard play. And Mike Garcia made this point. I forget what I tweeted out, and he replied with this point. He said he noticed that the Lakers don't have any quick, shifty guards. And in a game where the Clippers were playing so high up and so aggressive on the Lakers' guards, this is where it would be nice to have somebody who is capable of taking those guys off the dribble and getting into the cracks of the defense and doing that kind of a thing. And the Lakers don't have really anybody on their team who can do that. Was there anything that the Lakers could have done, though, to combat that from the get-go? Like, could they have set back screens or done back cuts or back handoffs or whatever? Was there anything that they could have done, or is this just kind of a flaw in the roster that you hope doesn't creep up again?
It's a flaw in the roster that is going to creep up again.
Yeah.
I mean, this is something we've said, like, the Lakers need better guards than they have. And this, again, this was a game. What we saw tonight will not manifest itself over and over again over 82 games on, like, a nightly or every other night type of basis.
But in a 7-game series.
this is a good team. This is a very good team that we watched last night with the Lakers. Mm-hmm. And but it's there's value in playing that team because this is exactly why we need another guard to be searching the buyout market. This is exactly, I mean, this is spilled milk, but this is exactly why, even if you don't keep every guy, this is exactly why you can hopefully keep one more asset than you gave up in the Anthony Davis trade, even if you got to combine him with KCP to get a solid guard, right, to fill out the team. The rebounding was inexcusable. This is an example, you know, we could have really used Kuz. There's so many guys that are just completely dependent on somebody else. And even though Kuz is not a guard, like you're saying, he's somebody that can at least get his own. Yeah. And they just like, it's either LeBron, Anthony Davis, and then a massive drop off. And the thing that's concerning about this game is this was the great version of Danny Green that we got tonight too. Right. Like, I just feel like, again, this is something, this is not just some overreaction to one game. I just feel like we need one more dude to get to where we want to go.
Yeah.
And that's just a reality of what I think this roster is. And again, they still have a puncher's chance. LeBron and AD aren't going to be crap like they were in the fourth quarter, in every fourth quarter. And
2 points. Overall.
Right. And just overall for the game, they were okay. LeBron was not particularly good. That'll be better on most nights, but just to beat a team like the Clippers, because the Clippers aren't the only team who fit this description, to beat a team like them 4 times out of 7, they're going to need to clean up several things and perhaps make some roster changes, because I just feel like they need one more dude.
LeBron James finishing with a -8.
Yeah.
That's a loud -8. That's a really, really loud -8. Let's take a quick second, though. I did find a positive over the course of the game that I think is a bigger takeaway than I think some are going to make it. Though it's kind of funny, I'm saying this in the third segment. So if it was such a big takeaway, I probably should have talked about it earlier. But when we come back, I'll talk about one of the positives that I want to take away from this game. I thought one of the things that I've really been looking for is for LeBron and AD to be out there on the court at the same time and get punched in the mouth, right? Like, I was really disappointed seeing the Lakers play the Warriors. What was it, like 4 times? Yeah, it's like 4 times in the preseason. And then their other 2 games were and they weren't going to play much in the preseason anyway. But if the vast majority of your games are going to be against a single franchise, and that franchise happens to be as undermanned as the Warriors for all of preseason, that's not a great tone setter for the regular season. But one of the things I was really looking forward to this year was, how are AD and LeBron going to respond if and when, while they're out on the court together, they get punched in the mouth? Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, they came out at the start of the third quarter, or maybe it was the fourth, whatever it was. They came out and they were both on the court at the same time. And yeah, it was the start of the third quarter. They came out and the Clippers were playing with their insane energy that they were playing with. And it could have been very easy for those guys to just kind of like sink into themselves and say, well, you know, shit happens, I guess. But mm-hmm. I really liked the way that the Lakers fought back in the game, given how little adversity they've gone through on the court, obviously, through the mm-hmm. preseason.
Danny Green flipped that game in the third quarter.
That's what I'm mentioning.
And so, like, I don't think it was LeBron really asserting his will or AD. I mean, they're great players, and they're going to make great plays mm-hmm. within that. But just like
fourth, then because
making that
Green was the third quarter, so it must have been like at some point in the fourth. But it couldn't have been in the fourth because they didn't play well there either. Maybe I'm just making up bullshit.
Hey man, we got to record as often as we do. Sometimes that's going to happen, babe. We don't, you know, sometimes we've got those 16 point nights and, you know, would LeBron shoot from the field, you know, 7 for 19 from the field, the podcast version of that, you know? But yeah, Green was the guy, you know, just having more veterans, having guys who will hit open shots. I thought Avery Bradley played solid in this game. So that will, again, these will be things that will work themselves out well across the course of the season. I'm really curious to see what KCP's role is on this team long term, because like he's a guy that like part of me wants to defend because he can be like when he is good, he never gets credit for it from Laker fans. Yeah. But the reason for that is nights like this where he's just so mind-numbingly bad in games that matter to whatever way we've inflated the value of this game mattering, and just like just contributes nothing, but also has this like this weird self-confidence about him that I don't know. He's a guy that like he's very crazy making to watch.
Yeah.
And I just feel like, so like Quinn Cook missed some open shots and he got jammed up by ball pressure, but I feel like he's going to make like the right play. Now, is he going to be able to handle the defensive responsibilities of KCP? No, but KCP wasn't able to handle those defensive responsibilities.
He may as well have had Quinn Cook on fucking Kawhi, whatever.
Right. Yeah, basically. Right. So I'm really curious to see how much rope KCP is given to be bad early on in the season.
My thing with KCP, we all have that friend, especially when we're like young and immature. You go out to a bar, and every time stuff kind of pops off, you wonder like, hey, where was that guy? Right? Like he's all about talking. Oh man, I was right there. I got your back, bro. I'm with you. Ride or die. Anything pops off, anybody talks crap, I'm gonna be right behind you, and I'm gonna pop up as soon as you need me to. And then like stuff actually goes off. And he's like, oh man, what? I was in the bathroom. That's too bad, right? When you're at a bar. And that just feels like KCP's like role in the NBA. That like when things don't really matter, like when you get into a brawl and you outnumber the other people that you're fighting like 7-1 and like or 7-2 or whatever it is, and you don't really need anybody else, KCP's right there, man. He's ride or die. I'm gonna take down anybody I have to when they're already down on the ground and there's nothing really on the line. But as soon as things like actually get tight and as soon as he's actually needed, like his reputation at this point on this Lakers team and really in the NBA, right? Because when he was with Detroit, it's not like they had a bunch of important minutes and he got paid really well based off of stat padding in Detroit and being a clutch employee or a client. But I hope that this narrative at some point flips, because it sucks to have somebody on this roster who you know that when you absolutely need that person to step up, he's not going to. He's going to have the game like he had tonight.
Yeah. And how big of a role, like, has there been a Laker over the last, you know, stretch of time who has had more opportunity and done less with it than KCP?
No. No. And I mean, I guess if I want to be antagonistic and be a smartass right now, I would say, well, he got you LeBron.
Man.
but even that, like, I can't even get myself to do that. Like, it's so frustrating to watch him because, like, we even saw it in the preseason, Pete. Like, in games where rotation guys were playing and KCP needed to you know, just kind of carry his own weight, he couldn't do it there. And then the one game that he played really, really well in that preseason was a game where everybody was sitting. Like, that's where he dropped his 27 points. It's like last year. In the games where everybody mattered, who mattered were playing and were actually vying for something in the regular season, KCP was nowhere to be seen. But when it came time to like earn his next contract and there were no stakes involved, well, up jumps KCP. It's my time to shine, baby. And it's so frustrating to see a guy like that on this team. It really, really sucks, because he's going to continue to get opportunities because he's LeBron's boy.
And what do you think that looks like in the playoffs? Yeah, man.
Man, that's the LeBron tax, I guess, though. It's the LeBron and AD tax.
So if we're paying a LeBron tax, we need a better LeBron than we got.
That's tonight. True. That's absolutely. And that was one of the points I made writing for Silver Screen and Roll about AD, too, is that like You can make these demands. And I wanted to, last thing before we get up out of here. One of the things I wrote for Silver Screen and Roll was basically that if you are AD and you're going to make the demands that come with being a superstar, and he is absolutely a superstar, then you have to live up to that superstar ability. And the example is sitting right here on this Lakers roster of how quickly the NBA will chew up and spit out superstars who make superstar demands and then doesn't live up to that superstardom in Dwight Howard, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm interested in your take on this, because I thought, you know, this was a game that was still within reach, and the Lakers still had way too many minutes in the fourth quarter that featured either JaVale or Dwight, that if Dwight or if AD is actually that kind of superstar and actually going to be worthy of those superstar demands that, you know, that comes with the KCP tax, then you got to slide down to the five and you got to own that game. And neither he or LeBron did.
Mm-hmm. You know, in some ways, you know, maybe this is silver lining type of stuff. In some ways, maybe it is good to get that punch in the mouth, as you said earlier in the show, early on, and be like, y'all got work to do. And this is, again, it's one game. It's not a hopeless situation by any means.
No, absolutely not.
But they've got, like, they've got to clean things up if they want to get to. You could talk all you want about, you know, revenge, and I'm going to show everybody this season, you know, who the best player in the NBA is. You got to go out there and do it, and you've got to figure out how to fit in with your teammates. Now, that's LeBron James and one of the greatest of all time, and that's exactly what he's in the process of doing right now. Again, after this Utah game especially, the schedule gets significantly easier, mm-hmm. and that will allow the Lakers to work out some of the weaknesses that they have, build continuity, and make certain mistakes while still being able to win games. So I'm hoping, I haven't looked at the schedule for the next time we play the Clippers, but this will be true beyond the Clippers. They are not the only team that we need to circle and be like, we got to beat them. But the next time we play one of these high-level teams, them, Milwaukee, possibly Philly, Denver, Houston, teams like that, that I'm really curious to see the progression from that game to this one, or from this game to that one, just to see how much of that they've been able to clean up over that schedule in which they've got, you know, more favorable opponents.
Are we supposed to do anything with Alex Caruso getting a DNP CD here?
He was so bad on offense in the preseason on the ball. It's funny. My brother and I are working on a video on him right now, just called what's up with Alex Caruso? Like, what's happened with Caruso? And his on ball decision-making was absolutely atrocious. It was high school point guard level stuff. Mm-hmm. And he's good off of the ball. And even in this preseason, he was good off of the ball. He just had such a high volume of on ball attempts, that I'm not going to get too upset. You know, again, I think defensively he would have been helpful, but I'm not going to get too upset about that. He needs to play better when he does get the opportunity than he did in the preseason for me to continue to advocate for him too hard, especially because it's not like it was Rondo getting the minutes over him, right? And Rondo actually would have been helpful tonight. I do believe that, even though I don't think that's the case most of the time.
Yeah, I think the point that you and I have been making consistently on Caruso is that if he wants minutes, he has to vastly outplay the people who are ahead of him and convince the coaching staff and convince LeBron James and convince Anthony Davis that he needs those minutes. And he didn't do that in the preseason. And while I think he would have helped last night, I can understand, given the politics involved, as frustrating as it might be, why he didn't play.
Yeah, it's just not the time to throw a fit about it, right? Like, it's just not.
No, I mean, there. Like, really what this game comes down to is that, like, you can't have the league's, you know, the duo that you and I have touted as the league's best superstar duo combine for 2 points in the fourth quarter.
Like, sometimes basketball ain't that complicated, right?
It really is. I was in charge of the recap. I had to find, like, 270 extra words to write because it's like a 30 word explanation as to why the Lakers lost.
For sure.
All right. Well, as much of a bummer as kicking off the season 0-1 is, and as frustrating as it is to lose to Little Brother without Paul George, there are still 81 games to go. There is still plenty of reason to continue to tune in and figure out. And this is all part of the ride, man. Like, there are going to be ups and downs to the season, and sometimes the season starts out in ways that you didn't want it to start out. So maybe they win this game, and then they get blown out by Utah. You never know on these things. But one thing you do know you're going to get is Monday through Friday, we're going to be here to talk to you about it. So, for now, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.